could be aware that the regents put in 50 to 70 days a year, and that there is a considerable personal sacrifice involved for many of these people, not only in terms of time, but in terms of money. Somebody remarked that they thought the regent's pay ought to be doubled. I personally think it ought to be tripled or four or five times as much as it is, and I'd be willing to pay it because they're paid absolutely nothing. Contrary to what you're used to thinking of assemblymen, city councilmen, other people in government, the regents serve entirely without any type of compensation. And I think it's one of the real earmarks of boards of education that they do serve that way. And they are to be commended, and I think I've always been amazed at the caliber of the people who will serve on such boards, certainly without compensation, without hope of monetary reward, with little hope of glory, but with a lot of opportunity for criticism. When we talk of the discussion of the problems of dealing with the public, of communicating, of the university image, the other day in a regents meeting, we were talking about different types of press releases on things that are done, and somebody raised the question, well, how do you glamorize math? How do you glamorize English? How do you glamorize history? And I think that Regent Fate pointed out very nicely, perhaps you cannot glamorize math or English or history as such, but you can point with pride to alumni, to graduates of the institution, who because of the math and the history and the English and the other courses and programs they had in the university have become outstanding successes. We can look at the Board of Regents, with three members are alumni. Someone mentioned legislators who are alumni. We can look all across the state and see professional people, prominent people, and just a lot of plain good Alaska people who are graduates of this institution. And maybe we can't glamorize the type of courses they took, but I think they stand certainly as living examples of the quality of the institution. I don't know how many of you read the Alaska Alumnus avidly or thoroughly, but in the spring 1972 issue, there was a yellow page insert, not a directory of where to buy things, but it was a special insert on the issues in higher education. And one of the points they raised was, are alumni still important? And they pointed out that there is alumni power, perhaps much of it, not only in Alaska, but elsewhere across the nation, is still latent. I think here that the impact will grow as their numbers grow. And I think that the impact and influence of alumni may be channeled into several areas. One, particularly as voting citizens, we're having more and more questions which are being decided by our elected officials. This year in Alaska, we can talk about aid to private education, the organization of the University of Alaska, the allocation of resources, all of these types of things which there are attempts being made to materially influence them and to make major decisions in the halls of the legislature. So perhaps your interest and your influence merely as voting citizens could be a tremendous factor on what happens to the total area of higher education here in Alaska. Alumni as donors, certainly as donors in the sense of providing funds for unconventional types of programs or to allow experimentation and innovation can be important. As employers, you influence job qualifications. You provide opportunities for apprenticeship and job training. I would be remiss in my obligation to myself, if to no one else, if before closing I did not offer a few comments on a subject which is of particular concern to me. I think it is one of the reasons why personally I am with the university, why I want to be with it, and that is because of the fact that we do have a statewide system of higher education. And I believe thoroughly in the concept, and I believe for Alaska it is certainly the best way to go. We are one of the very few states in this nation with a constitutionally established university and Board of Regents. We have a single board which is responsible for all public education beyond the high school. There are other states which have separate universities. They have separate colleges. They have separate community colleges. And most of these states are searching desperately to provide statewide coordination. They are trying to get where we are. Admittedly, operating a statewide system is complex. The board and the administration and the staff must believe in the concept, and they must think and act from a statewide concept. There must be reasonable decentralization and maximum regional autonomy, but there can be diversity within unity. I would repeat that the task of policy formulation, the administration, and coordination is complex. There are sectional differences, internally and externally, but certainly breaking up the system is no solution. For the political acrimony, the cutthroat competition for funds, and the duplication of programs and efforts would seriously affect the scope, depth, and quality of higher education. I'm not above a bit of plagiarism when it comes to, honest plagiarism, when it comes to trying to get a few remarks put together. So the other night I was reading back through some speeches, and one of them that I happened to read was that of Dr. William Wood when he made his inaugural address. I think the date was October 13, 1960. I hope that he reads it again, and I would hope that the Regents and many others would have an opportunity to read that speech again, because it was amazingly prophetic. Certainly he had his crystal ball clean and in good operating condition when he wrote that speech, because he talked about the emerging statewide system, the development of community colleges, the extension and outreach programs, the growth of academic programs, the potential for research. At the time that he made that speech, the total university budget was about $5 million. This year, it is about $40 million, or about eight times that amount. But over that period, the increase in state funding, in those funds out of the general fund, has not been eight times. But the phenomenal increases have come through restricted grants and outside funding, through the initiative of faculty and staff who have gone out to provide opportunities for people in this state through outside funding. Of our total expenditures in that $40 million budget, less than half is from direct state appropriation. And about $15 million, or 37.5%, comes through restricted grants. In other words, three times what the total university budget was in 1960 is now coming into this university in terms of outside funding and restricted grants. And I think that's a remarkable story of progress during his period of tenure. In The Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens used the statement, "These are the best of times and these are the worst of times." And I think certainly this might be applicable as far as the University of Alaska is concerned. The university has made tremendous strides forward in the span of 50 years. And I think the progress in the past decade has been nothing short of phenomenal. The next year, the next five, and the next 10 are going to continue to pose serious and complex problems. But I, for one, am convinced that with the continued perceptive and conscientious leadership of the Regents, with an administration which is held accountable by the Regents to maximize the opportunity for the statewide system to come to fruition, with the appropriate and reasoned involvement of students and staff, and with the understanding and support of alumni and friends, this university will surely emerge as the great university which is essential if Alaska is to become a great state. When considering the bad, the good and the bad, and the ups and the downs, I think one could easily permit himself to get a bit grim and to lose his sense of humor. Personally, I refuse to do so. And I am convinced and condemned, I'm convinced personally that perhaps I'm an incurable optimist, and I think once in a while some of my compatriots on the Administrative Council and other circles think that I'm a bit too optimistic. But to illustrate the difference between optimism and pessimism, let me tell you the story of the parents who had twin boys. Now, these parents decided that they were going to raise them by the book, and they read every book they could about raising children, every article and so forth. They were conscientious. They were good parents. But as these boys got to be about 12 years old, they became very concerned because one of them was a hopeless pessimist. The other one was a hopeless optimist. And despite all of their psychological insights and everything they tried to do, they were not able to temper that, and they began to worry as these youngsters went into their teens that certainly life was going to be too much of a burden for them unless it could be cured. So they decided to take a rather drastic approach. So they fitted up a couple of rooms in their home with one-way glass so they could see in and the boys couldn't see out. So in the one room, they gathered together all of the newest and the finest toys that they could think of. And in this room, they put the boy who was the pessimist in hopes that seeing all of this glory would make him think that life is good, life is wonderful. So they put him in there and they observed him and they listened to him. And he continued to be a pessimist. He was very critical because instead of a 10-speed bicycle, there was a 5-speed bicycle. And on the paint on the new wagon was a little bit chipped here and there, and the basketball was a little too small. They hadn't done a thing for it. Well, in the other room, they had gone out to the local riding stables, and they had brought in a trailer load of what we must call for what it is, a load of manure from the stables, and they put this in the other room. And they put the boy in there who was the optimist, and they thought perhaps this would cure him. And as they looked in through the window and as he listened, they saw him on top of that pile just digging for all he could be, and they heard him mutter, "As much as that stuff as there is in here, there must be a pony somewhere." So what I'm saying to you, I tend to look for the pony, and I hope that you might join me in looking for the pony as we seek to take the University of Alaska forward.
Thank you very much, Dr. Defoe. It was a most interesting speech. I would like to introduce now the members of the Board of Regents who are present with us tonight. And they turned off the punch a couple hours ago, I think. Dr. William Wood is an ex officio member of the Board of Regents. Mr. Brian Brundin is present tonight, I believe. Would you stand up, Mr. Brundin, please? Thank you. Mr. E. Mr. A.D. Robertson?
No.
Okay. Dr. Hugh Fate? Mr. Robert E. McFarland? And the President of the Board of Regents is Mr. William A. O'Neill. Bill, I wonder if I could get you to say a few words up here, please.
Wouldn't you know it, I have to follow Defoe. And you know, really, that's an impossible type of situation to be in. But I was thinking back tonight of an alumni dinner when I was a young regent. I'm not too old yet. But I always remember the first president of the university when he was asked to say a few words to the alumni banquet at that time. And he always used to, he was a little portly, you understand, Dr. Bunnell was, and he used to stand back and he'd say, "Well, here we are." And so here we are. I always used to think, you know, that what was he thinking about when he made that gesture and when he said those words? And now I know. He was thinking about what he was going to talk about. But he was a very brilliant man, as our present president is, as our vice president that just talked before me is, and therefore I have to think a little bit longer than those fellows do. You know, I am very proud that I am an alumnus of the University of Alaska. Exceptionally proud. I am also feel very grateful that as an alumnus of this university, I have the privilege and the honor of not only being on the Board of Regents, but being the president of the Board of Regents. This is the way I feel about the University of Alaska. And I want to say also to you that this is really the way every single regent that has been on this, that has been connected with this university throughout all the years that I know of, have felt and have worked for. There are people that have not listened to us. They have not accepted our dream, if you will, of the expansion of the statewide institution as we have seen it for over 15 years at least. And now they're just beginning to wake up a little bit. Just a little bit. However, I suppose, Bill, that I am up here also. You know, nobody give me any instructions. You know, somebody said this afternoon that, well, we want you to say a few words. So where do we go from here? You know, I was a little bit perturbed the other day because I understand that the board of directors of the Alumni Association had met, and this is the first year for some time that they did not select an individual to receive a Distinguished Alumnus Award. And I was very, very perturbed. In fact, I talked very strongly to it about the Executive Secretary of the Alumni, and I'm still quite perturbed about it. And she practically went through the ceiling. She didn't understand why in the devil that there wasn't an alumnus of this university that was worthy of a Distinguished Alumnus Award. And, you know, she says, just don't mention it to me. I'm going right through the ceiling. So, I didn't know anything about it. But, you know, at this moment, I would like to have Mrs. Betty Harrop Clark step up here and receive the Distinguished Alumnus Award. I want to say something at this moment, you know. Somebody pulled a little sneaky trick on me one time, too. And now I have an opportunity to get even. But I think Betty Harrop Clark is thoroughly deserving of the award of which she is getting. She is the alumni of Alaska and throughout the nation because she has been more instrumental in organizing alumni associations throughout the United States of America besides foreign countries. And I think this honor is well deserved and timely.
Thank you, I'm very touched. I really do not feel that I'm deserving, and I take everything back that I said to you about your board of directors. I still think you're wrong. And I take back what I was thinking about you, Bill O'Neill. I thought you were talking too much. And I already told him that once today, but thanks.
Now we are very privileged to hear a group of singers from the Float the Fairbanks Light Opera Association. They will present something called The Showcase.
In the fall, we will be presenting The Merry Widow. Tonight, we are just going to bring some familiar, perhaps some not quite so familiar songs from the musical scene. And we'd like to start out with one that we feel is appropriate, I Hear a Song by Richard Hyatt.
Thank you.
problems, all of you will agree at some time or other, it's a big, wide, wonderful world we live in. Sopranos. I'd like to introduce Mrs. Beverly Davis, who happens to be my wife, so you see me. She will sing Some Carousel. What are you singing?
If I Love You.
Oh. Thank you.
It's fun.